Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, Friday, June the 10th, 2016. We are brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen X types from a left-wing perspective. We are very happy to have with us Arliss Bunny joining us again. Thank you so much for joining us, Arliss.
I'm so glad to be here. There's lots going on. It'll be a fun conversation.
Yes.
As usual, I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And Arliss has been doing the rounds today. Heard her this morning on KGRO.
Yes, I did hear you talking about Social Security.
Yeah.
I do believe this is the only time I've been on three different shows in one day.
Wow. Impressive. What was the third besides ours?
My own. We did.
Oh, right.
Recorded a big chunk of my own show today.
Nice. So, yeah, I mean, I was listening to KGRO yesterday, and at the end of his show, he was talking about Social Security, and I was thinking, Arliss should really be on. And sure enough, this morning, there you were.
Yeah, I was very pleased.
Reminding him and the rest of us, debunking all the commonly held myths about Social Security. And
I did not know the difference between insolvency and bankruptcy. And I was sitting there listening to you, and I was like, this is amazing. Like, I'm learning so much. So kudos to you, Arliss.
Well, it is incredible how our you know, how we frame what we say is so important. And they've been so clever to let us to encourage the mixing of the word insolvency with bankruptcy, because these are in no way the same thing. But we think of them as the same thing now. We think of them as interchangeable, and they are not.
Well, and no one ever explained that to me, for sure. I had no idea. I mean, I knew that Social Security was probably not the gloom and doom disaster scenario that everyone says it is. I just sort of figured that was probably the case because it continues to keep on going.
Well, there's so much deprogramming that needs to be done.
Yeah.
Even for Democrats.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was a point, and I think it was in the 1980s, I'm not quite sure, but there was a point in the 1980s, I want to say, when Social Security was 3 months from insolvency. Uh-huh. And some minor changes were made, and you know, Social Security lives on today.
Yes.
It is a problem so easily fixed in so many ways.
And
they just don't want us to know that.
Well, and I love what you said about immigration, because when I was studying political science in college, one of the things that we talked about in terms of illegal immigration was that in many ways that the immigrants in this country are propping up the Social Security system, that they're the thing that makes it able to still function. And so then when you were talking about, you know, immigration today and how, you know, if we need more workers in the system, that's the best way to go about it. And for so many other reasons too, but I thought it was a really great perspective.
Well, we think of immigration, again, and this is meme training, essentially, is how I think of it. We think of immigration as something that will be a drag on the economy. And yet every essentially valid study that's been done on the subject absolutely says over and over again in about 10 different ways that it will be exactly the opposite.
Right.
Right.
And there's no reason to believe that immigration would be anything but valuable and good for the U.S. economy. The only thing that stands in the way of that is fear of people who are concerned about being surrounded by people who don't look exactly like them.
Exactly.
Yes.
Well, moving on from that to the historic last few days of Hillary Clinton becoming the presumptive, quote, Democratic nominee. Because, you know, on our little live stream there, we weren't able to talk for very long.
And I was busy crying, so.
Me too.
Well, I'm going to sort of leave it, the most of the conversation, to you guys to talk about what that meant to you.
Yeah. So I just want to say that it's extraordinary. And I watched her speech about 3 times. And I just hard to overstate how significant it is for me. And I just wanted to talk to Arliss, you about, you know, you've been in this system a lot longer than I have. And I just wanted your perspective on how it impacted you and what your thoughts are. And I just wanted to see what you thought.
It's a lot of things. on the political side, I drove to Fresno when I was 16 and barely had a driver's license, so that I could campaign for Roseanne Vujicic, who was running to be the very first female senator in California, to the California Senate. And I walked door to door in precincts in Fresno to get her elected, because I was so determined that there be a woman's voice in the California Senate.
Yeah.
And that's at the same time in my life that I was also driving down to San Francisco to walk door to door to get Harvey Milk elected.
Oh, wow.
In San Francisco. And we would meet up at Castro Camera. You know, a bunch of us would meet up at Castro Camera, and they would, you know, Harvey and his team would give us flyers and tell us where they wanted us to go. And we'd chat for a few minutes about what he wanted us to talk about at, you know, at doors. And he'd get to know us a little bit and then launch us out into the neighborhoods there in the Castro. And we, you know, we just hit the pavement and got Harvey elected. And I remember that feeling, both for Roseanne and Harvey, of what it felt like that first. You know,
yeah.
The first person, Harvey was the first openly gay person in the country to be elected to public office. And Roseanne was the first woman in California to be elected to the California Senate. And she was there for years. And I mean, she remained. She was reelected over and over.
Wow.
And the thing about being there for those firsts is you realize that you have crossed a threshold, that it will never be, the world will never be the same again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember being there in the Castro on the night Harvey was elected and literally dancing in the street, and then being there and walking in the gathering the night that he was assassinated.
Yeah.
I didn't know much about Harvey Milk until the movie came out a few years back with Sean Penn. And so I have to ask you, since I really enjoyed that movie, did that capture it fairly well? You know, how good a representation of all that did you think the movie was?
Well, okay, so I could not go to the movie theater and see that movie.
Oh,
yeah.
I can't even talk about that movie,
yeah,
as you can hear. It was... I finally, when it came out on video, I watched it with the big box of Kleenex and, you know, in the trash can.
Right.
And just, you know, cried from beginning to end. But it was very good. It was very well done. It's very much how I remember that period of time.
Good.
Wow.
That's good to know.
It's so amazing that you were there and that you were able to help that campaign. I knew about Harvey Milk much earlier than the movie, because we studied it in school, particularly the sort of gay panic defense and the was the Twinkie defense and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I was well aware of him, and also really loved the movie. But that's so incredible that you were able to be there and campaign for him, and what an extraordinary thing to have done.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the Twinkie defense, and the thing about that, so that verdict came down, and, you know, he got and I'm not going to use the name of the man, but he got just a slap on the wrist because he'd eaten, apparently, you know, the court decided that he'd eaten too many Twinkies, jurors decided he'd eaten too many Twinkies, and the sugar high was what caused him to assassinate Harvey Milk and Mayor Moscone.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just... It was insane. And what happened in the streets of San Francisco that night, the riot that happened in the streets of San Francisco that night, people didn't know where to put their grief and anger.
Rage. Yeah.
So when you look at what's going on, you know, in the last couple of weeks in Bernie's campaign and, you know, even, I guess, from Nevada forward, right, from the Nevada convention forward, when you look at what's going on in the Bernie campaign, as angry as it makes me that I become watching violence be used, I do get that people don't know what to do with their frustration and with their feeling that their feeling of desperation.
Right.
I get how that comes over, particularly young people.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I went into the city on that night. I was there and, you know, basically took cover ultimately with a group of my friends. But I remember how people felt. And so I do get that to a certain degree. I just don't get it when public officials say, yeah, violence is wrong, but.
Yep.
That I don't, I'm
or
sorry.
Or racism is wrong, but.
Uh-huh. But.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That leads me.
Well, hold on. I'm not done.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So getting back to Hillary just for a minute, you know, it occurred to me when it all happened. I don't have children, but I have a niece that I'm particularly close to. She's the light of my life. I love her. And she's 6 years old. And I was thinking about her that night. And I was thinking that she'll really never have to grow up in a world where women can't be the president, where, you know, I was always told when I was a kid, well, you can do anything and you can be anything. But there's a difference between telling children that and then having them grow up in a world where they see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes me think of that little kid who touched Barack Obama's hair in the White House, that famous photo.
Yeah.
That black people and people of color generally, that they're growing up in a time where there's already been a black person that's been president, and that the little girls get to grow up in a world where, as long as we prevail, and I think we will, that there will already have been a woman president. So, of course, it won't even be a question. And I think that's powerful. And my older brother, who is her father, is the great independent, right? As goes Josh, as goes the election, I always say. So I said he doesn't like Hillary, obviously, because he doesn't know much. And I said, you know, no matter how you feel about Hillary and her policies and the little that you know, I hope you share this with Addison. I hope you talk to her about this. I hope you let her watch the speech and talk to her about what happened tonight, regardless of how you feel about her politics. And please don't bring in your feelings about this woman, but just talk to her about it, you know? And he said, oh, I wasn't going to. And then we talked about it for a while. And he said, I definitely will. So I think that no matter how you feel or what political stripe you are, you know, it's historic and it's important.
The very first professional conference I went to in my field, I was, you know, in my early 20s, and I walked through the back door of the basically the plenary room where everyone was gathering, and there were 3,000 men and 3 women.
Wow.
And I remember coming through that back door, and you know, that hadn't struck me yet about the industry, that about the defense industry, that it was going to be that way. That
yeah.
Somehow that had not crossed my mind. And I walked through the back door, and it just hit me in the face like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
And I stood there and I thought, oh my God. And I see out of the corner of my eye this person waving at me. And I look, and it's one of those other 2 women. And she was waving at me, and she had saved me a seat because
oh.
She had seen me checking in. And she knew that, you know, I was obviously very young. And she immediately realized that this was going to be a problem.
Yeah.
And she made me, you know, she, you know, befriended me. And it was really very, very kind of her. But that's where it was when I was that age. And, you know, it's not like I'm ancient. And
no.
Now in my profession, there are thousands of young women.
Yeah.
Or of women. And it's in my lifetime.
Yeah.
It's changed that much.
I feel like there's such a generational difference by a very short number of years, right? Between women of different ages, not even that many years apart. Like my best friend is, she's in her late 30s, let's just say. And I'm in my early 30s. And even her experience with feminism and being a woman in the world is different than mine. And then I look at like my mom, and it's completely different. And then I look at kids that are maybe even supposed to be millennials like me or whatever, that are, you know, in their 20s, and their perception of feminism and intersectionality is so different too. It's kind of extraordinary, and I think that's because it's moving so quickly, you know?
And I remember, because again, I walked precincts to get Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer elected to the Senate from California.
Wow.
And I remember Dianne Feinstein in particular. And in her campaign headquarters, and she was there one day and she was kind of chatting with us. And one of her campaign workers said, you know, to draw in more, you know, more women, don't you want to be a little bit warmer? And she turned, she looked at him, looked at this person, and she said, are you out of your mind? They already think I can't, you know, the electorate already thinks I'm a woman and therefore I can't handle this job. Yep. I have to be a man in every way imaginable. I have to be a man in order to get this job.
Yes.
And if you don't think that that's not part of what is loaded into Hillary.
Oh my God.
You know, because she and Feinstein are not that far apart in age.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
And it has absolutely been beaten out of Hillary that she cannot appear to be in any way, you know,
soft,
fluffy or soft or frivolous or. And so when people
emotional.
Say she's wooden,
mm-hmm.
yeah, she's wooden and she's mechanical and. I want to stand on a box and scream. I want to stand on a mountaintop and scream. What the hell? You guys made her that way. She didn't
That's
start
right.
that way. You
no.
made her that way.
That was the only way she would ever have gotten to where she is today. The
that
rules,
was the adapt to survive.
That was the rules. That those were the rules. That is how she got to where she is, and to punish her for it now. And you can't win. If she gets emotional, then she's, you know, if she's soft, it's either she's soft, she's emotional, she's a woman, she can't, or she's, you know, the dragon lady with no feelings and she's a robot and she, or she's shrill and angry and, you know, completely out of control. Like, there's no emotion that Hillary Clinton can have that is acceptable. There isn't
That's right.
one. And
That's
and
right.
not having any is also not acceptable. So you literally can't win. There is nothing that she can do that will satisfy these people. Period.
Right.
It's crazy making.
Exactly
it,
right.
Seriously, like there, it, what we have done to this woman and continue to do, I don't know how she has been able to do it all these years. And then when somebody says something like, oh man, wait till Donald Trump gets a hold of her. I'm like, oh yeah, she's going to be real upset by his tweeting. Do you have any idea what this woman has gone through in her life? Donald Trump is not going to rustle her in any way.
And she's taken on and lived through really vicious, really dangerous, really smart, you know, opponents.
Yeah.
This Donald is Trump is an ass.
He's a lightweight.
That's right. He is a lightweight.
Yep.
And he is not in her league.
Nope.
I mean, he really is truly not in her league. And the thing that even more forcefully and completely ensconces him there is that he is unwilling, because he has a very good brain, he is unwilling to hire. I know that just... is unwilling to hire people or listen to people who, because you know that there is an army of Republican, you know, advisors and consultants that are saying, please, please just listen to me.
Yes.
I can solve this problem. And, you know, and Trump, he could even hire some of these people, but he's not going to listen to them.
No.
Trump is Trump.
Well, not for more than 5 minutes.
He can't. Yeah. He's incapable.
Like he read off a teleprompter today, so they're excited again for a minute, but that's not going to last.
No, he's the most insecure little man with the tiniest ego and the thinnest skin, and he has no self-control, and he's not going to listen to anybody who's not a yes man. Or, you know, maybe they'll be on staff, but he's going to do what he's going to do, period.
And it's not even going to take Hillary to beat him into submission. It's, you know, Elizabeth Warren or Julian Castro is going to take him and hit him out of the park.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's not.
Or Barack Obama. I feel like Obama is picking a fight. He is ready for a fight. He wants it so bad. He's like, thank God this is over. Now I can get involved. And I swear, you know, Travis and I were talking about this at dinner tonight. Like, he's going to say something racist about Obama. He's going to say something sexist about Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton. He's going to say something horrific about, like, Bo Biden or something. I mean, he's not going to be able to handle the level of scathing, you know, that they're going to do to him. He's going to melt down on a regular basis and show himself, not that it matters to his core supporters, but to everybody else, they're going to be like, okay, this guy is clearly emotionally unstable. Like,
well, let's talk about,
I have this mental picture just really quickly. I have this mental picture of like the last 3 months in the White House where every major White House advisor and, you know, just everybody around the president has like, has, you know, been saying amongst themselves and reinforcing each other, okay, don't let him get a hold of your cell phone, because he will, you know, if he goes back and tweets out to you know, you just know that Obama has been dying.
Oh my gosh,
about this and
dying, you
know, and been unable to do so, and you know, just like itchy fingers, you know, itchy tweeting fingers, just and like,
come on, let me. Oh God, I have such a good one, and he's such a good campaigner. Like everybody forgets. He is going to be so brutal. It's going to be so delicious. I cannot wait for him to start campaigning against Donald Trump.
And something happened to me last night. I really, really, really have been bent on Elizabeth Warren staying in the Senate. I still am. And if not in the Senate, then as Secretary of the Treasury.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it occurred to me last night when she was ripping into Donald Trump that not only would she be a great VP on the campaign trail and really unify the party in a way no one else could at this point in time,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't limit what she does when she gets into government. In other words, she can cut any kind of relationship deal she and Hillary craft. The one thing about the vice presidency is that it is as an invisible or visible as a president and VP choose to make it.
That's right. That's right. Do you really think that's a good idea, though? I don't want to like say it's not, but I honestly worry. Like, we're already got one lady. You put another lady on that ticket. I feel like we are in, I don't know. I think it's, I would love nothing more than that to be a thing that could work. But I worry. I do.
Well, here's been my, because I've really been thinking about this a lot since last night.
Yeah.
First of all, you know, there are more of us than there are of them.
True.
The majority of Democrats are going to vote for Hillary anyway. They're going to vote for whatever Democrat is on the ticket, but they're going to vote for Hillary anyway because she's an incredibly qualified candidate.
Yes.
But the biggest concerns on our side of the line and with most independents has been inequality, you know, campaign finance reform, those kinds of things, which are all, you know, right in the core of Elizabeth Warren's ballpark. So that really, that makes her.
But what about just plain old sexism, Arliss? Just good old red-blooded American sexism.
I think that enough young people and enough independents and enough of the core of the Democratic Party, I think that's what we need. I think that wins. And in addition to that, I think it's bolstered by the number of good hardcore Republicans who aren't going to be able to make themselves vote for Trump.
But they're going to vote Elizabeth Warren? I don't know.
No, they won't vote Elizabeth Warren. They just won't vote. You know, they won't punch a presidential ticket. They'll punch for the Libertarian, which is the same thing as voting for Hillary.
Right.
Well, on the topic, and I've seen a lot of the, you know, the rabid Bernie people who haven't just given up yet turn their guns on Elizabeth Warren today, which I find really ridiculous and disgusting. And I guess to a larger point, I listen to you and Greg, and you guys are so much more patient and understanding. And you know what? I hadn't thought of what you said before with all that misplaced anger and disappointment and not knowing where to put it. And that's a perspective I hadn't really thought of. And Greg also too. He's, you know, he says, he points out how ridiculous a lot of this Never Hillary stuff is, but says, you know, the Bernie people are hurting, give them time. And you and Greg have way more patience than Rachel and I for own peers.
Oh, my God. I'm so done with
our peers and we caucused for Bernie Sanders.
Yes. And I just want them to just be done already. I'm so over it. Shut up.
I wonder if some of that is that you and Greg are parents and that you raised children who occasionally had tantrums. Or, you know,
been in this longer?
Yeah, I mean,
what? I don't know. But we are just like,
how do we find some patience and perspective not to wring the necks of all these privileged, young, wonderful
white dudes,
suburban people telling us
fine to vote for Trump?
That Trump equals Hillary. Let's burn it all down because we didn't get our way.
Well, I mean, there's nothing to be done for the Sean Kings of the world. You just have to let it go. You know,
right.
Yeah.
Just hit mute on your Twitter stream and let it go. But the reality is that, you know, you're very sweet and you're very gracious, but you don't hear, you know, it's like me yesterday yelling at my iPhone while Stitcher is coming out of it playing David's show talking about Social Security. I am not always so collected and gracious about your generation in terms of this whole Bernie thing. You know, okay, there are times when I'm yelling at my iPhone. But the fact is that it isn't having, you know, raised teenagers. I arrived as a step parent just in time for my husband's kids to be teenagers,
oh boy,
which, you know, was like being thrown into hot oil. But
I can't even imagine.
And these are, you know, these are wonderful. We raised his boys, and these are wonderful young men. I mean, really wonderful.
Yeah, but teenagers are teenagers.
Teenagers are teenagers, and, you know,
awful
shoot me now.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, just, oh, my God.
Even the best ones, yeah.
And, you know, the fact is that experience is experience, and you can't replace that any other way. And when you listen to Greg being so patient about it and everything, it's because, you know, you've just been there, and you've, you know, you've listened to people go through things like this for various reasons and in various processes. And, you know, and Greg is so smart, and I hadn't thought about it this way until he talked about it in this way, but it is the five stages of grief.
Yes. Yes.
Right,
true.
Right.
Anger is the first.
Yep.
Yeah.
Denial and
bargaining.
Well, we haven't even gotten there. But here's what I worry about a little bit, Arliss, because you think back to the Hillary Pumas, and they were saying the same exact things and being just as belligerent and awful, and they were right here in Denver.
Yeah.
And but sure enough, after a while, when they calmed down, they looked at the balance sheet and realized, this is one candidate who supports our ideals and our agenda, and one that clearly doesn't. So they came home. But, you know, a lot of these younger voters or younger Bernie supporters, they haven't had that experience and that breadth of sort of full understanding.
And a lot of them are privileged in a way that it probably wouldn't impact their lives that much in certain ways if it's Trump or Hillary.
You mean young white men?
Yeah.
And Hillary,
and they don't
and
seem
Hillary
to
didn't demonize
care.
Obama.
They don't seem to care that maybe they don't know. Maybe they don't know their own privilege or know the impact it will have on minority communities of all sorts. But I worry,
or
like
even
Travis,
themselves.
that they don't recognize that and that they aren't necessarily going to do the right thing.
I first of all, I believe that people are affected by what's going on around them.
Yes.
And as the dynamic changes and as things coalesce, they will be, for the most part, affected by that. A new poll came out today saying, let me get this right, 5 out of every 6 Bernie supporters will vote for Hillary.
That's a higher number than I've seen.
Yeah.
In
a while, but
that's great.
Well, it comes after the Obama, and the poll was taken immediately. It was a snap poll taken immediately after the Obama, Biden, and Warren, you know, announcements yesterday. So, and those things affected people that quickly.
Yeah.
So I think there'll be a transition, but also remember how much, incredible pressure and, in fact, anger was directed at Elizabeth Warren to run, and then anger directed at her when she decided not to run.
Yeah.
And a large percentage of that came from young white men.
Yeah.
So I really think that she's in a unique position in that regard, and she could be a vice president who operates in a way that no other vice president has in the past.
So you think that she could be the VP pick?
Well, okay. So I think that there are really two. I think it's either Elizabeth Warren, and they would give her, I think she and Hillary would work out a really interesting and unique purview for her in Massachusetts, even though they have a Republican governor. And if Warren was to be pulled out as the VP, they require a special election. So it's not an appointment.
Right. That's how Scott Brown got in.
Right. But chances of Massachusetts going that way at this point in time are pretty limited.
Yeah. Okay.
So the feeling is really, and also Joe Kennedy III is, in a position now to actually fill that seat.
Okay. Right.
And he was too young before. He's really now in that position. So he would be a really exceptional candidate there, and so there's a path in Massachusetts, because otherwise, the word out of the Democratic Party is thou shalt not, do anything to screw up flipping the Senate.
Yes.
And that's completely understandable. So that means you can't really look at any other senator who is in a state where the governor is a Republican.
Well, Senate aside, let's assume for the moment that seat would be safe.
Okay, so then let's go to the other really logical candidate VP candidate, who would be Julian Castro.
Yes.
And I think Julian Castro would be a great vice president. Here's my one concern. First of all, I think he would be a great vice president because I think he's a tremendous individual, a tremendous man. I think he would be great on the campaign trail. I think he would be great in making it very clear to the Latino community in this country that we are serious.
Yeah.
And, validate them in, and I don't mean that it's our place to validate them or not, but it would be in the same way that having Hillary on the ballot is so important to women, it would be important to the Latino community to have Julian Castro on the ballot. I really think that's true. But,
and he's from Texas.
Yes. And last night, Rachel Maddow asked Elizabeth Warren if she was ready to be the president of the United States. In other words, if she was the vice president and something happened to Hillary, does Elizabeth Warren think that she could step into the job and be the president of the United States? And she said yes.
Yeah, she saw that. She was amazing on Maddow last night.
Yeah, she was great on Maddow last night. But I would need to hear that from Julian Castro. I just don't know if he has that sense about himself.
Right. Sure. And we always forget that.
I would trust his judgment. If he said yes, I would believe him. I just kind of would need to hear that.
Right. We do sort of forget that, that is the point of the vice presidency, is not as just a sort of political arm that it's there to replace the president should the need arise. And that's a good point.
Should never forget that in a post Palin world.
Right. Good call. Good call.
Betcha.
I'm still not convinced she's not going to be Trump's VP pick.
I think she's in the run. I honest to God, I think she's in the running.
That's so insane.
Yeah.
She's already tanked one Republican. Not that he was going to win anyway, but she sure didn't help. But she's. Oh. I mean, who else is he going to get? We were talking about this at dinner tonight too. Who would do it, first of all? And then...
It's a dwindling list.
I mean, Chris Christie.
Well, Chris I was going to say Chris Christie.
Yeah.
But that buys Trump well, of course, Trump doesn't pay attention to these things, but it buys him nothing.
Well, and we can hardly be talking about
picks by him anyway.
Potentially right. Hillary's indictment when literally he's maybe, you know what I mean? Like that takes the wind out of the sails of Hillary's email scandal and possible indictment because Christie's is obviously so much greater of a likelihood.
Yes.
You think.
Yeah.
One of the things I've learned in the last couple of days and really today, that I did not know. First of all, on Hopping Mad, please, everyone, listen to the podcast when it comes out on Monday, because we have an interview with a woman named Ariella Barker. She is an advocate for people with disabilities, persons with disabilities. She is disabled herself, and she's a lawyer, and she gave us the most incredible, articulate, detailed interview, literally an hour and a half of information of which I knew maybe, I want to say 15%. I mean,
wow.
Because I just haven't spent much time thinking, and I'm embarrassed to admit it, I have not spent that much time thinking about it. Here's one of the facts I learned in this whole process. What's the largest minority in this country?
I mean, if I were to guess, I would say
Hispanics.
Yeah, I would say Latinos.
No, it's people with disabilities, 20% of the population.
That's
have identifiable legal disabilities.
20%. So 1 in 5 is what we're saying. Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a whole spectrum of things. And
sure.
It doesn't necessarily mean that it's something that you're going to see or, you know, that's going to jump out at you if you're, you know, walking down the street. But
are we talking about mental health issues included in that? Or is this just
yes.
physical? Okay, great.
Yeah. And, you know, ones that are actually, you know, that actually rise to the level where they affect
disability.
Someone's ability to function. Yeah.
Sure. I have a friend who's on disability because he has mental health issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 32% of the federal prison population has a disability.
Yeah.
And a large percentage of those being a mental health issue. And anyway, in this interview, Ariella is talking about her journey. She's talked about being a Bernie or bust person. She absolutely started in that camp. She was working hard on the Bernie campaign. She was making calls. She was doing everything the campaign asked of her. She was very, very active. But over a period of time, she started to realize that the Bernie campaign was really not just ignoring people with disabilities, but purposefully ignoring people.
That's so strange to me.
Really?
I'm gonna have to listen because I that
like
kind
she
of
has
boggles
specific,
my mind.
She has specific.
Yeah.
Like really.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Specific. And I would not have bought that had she not been specific. And then I went online and did, you know, hours and hours of homework.
Yeah.
And it's staggering.
It's really?
Yeah. But she's going along about this process. She goes through this whole thing with the Bernie campaign, trying to, you know, reach out to them because she had been an advisor to the city of New York, to Mayor Bloomberg. I mean, so this is not, she's not a low level, you
activist.
Know,
sure.
Activist. She's near the top of, you know, of that community. And she made a really concerted effort to reach out to the Bernie campaign and say, you are making some, you know, basic errors. You know, I am assuming that it's just because you don't know,
right.
But let me provide this information to you and,
right.
you know, help you figure out how to rephrase and come back at this in a way that will work for the, what they call the PWD, the Persons with Disabilities community.
Sure.
And the Bernie campaign blew her off in the most brutal and
eye-opening
way. That. So
wow,
she's like reeling from this, and she happens to be talking with a friend of hers who is also an activist. And this person says, "You know what? let me make a call to a friend of mine on the Hillary campaign. And this person reaches out to a very high-level Hillary campaign advisor at 9 o'clock at night. And at 9 o'clock at night, that person immediately calls Ariella.
Wow.
And they have a phone conversation. The woman says, asks her all of her, thought process, what she would like to see the campaign do, they immediately, began to work with her. But more importantly, they already had on staff from the very beginning disabilities, they already had a program. They already had a plan. They already had people on staff.
Right.
So
right.
This was already part of the language of the Hillary campaign.
Wow.
The cold, she doesn't care about you, Hillary campaign.
Uh-huh.
And Ariella was blown back by this because she had really bought the whole Bernie bro thing. She had really, really completely swallowed that. And she was shocked. And so she went kind of through a grieving process and all of that. But she talks about all of that. But what's amazing is that she wrote all this down into a blog post. And she puts it up on her little blog over on WordPress.
Yeah.
And this thing goes viral. I mean, it covers the internet. And of course, the Bernie or bust people, blow up in a brutal way.
Of course they do.
The disabilities community comes out and is incredibly supportive, and the Hillary people come out and are incredibly supportive, but it just becomes this huge national conversation, which is how I got plugged into it. I'm, minding my own business one night, on Twitter, and this thing flies past me on Twitter a couple of times from a couple of different people. I finally click on it and I go there and I read this blog post, and then I'm like, I have got to, I have got to get this woman on the show.
Wow.
But one of the things she said was that her blog post went viral right before the California primary. And California has a huge and incredibly active and incredibly well-coordinated community, PWD community. And, so she's actually wondering out loud, Hillary's numbers were much higher than anybody expected out of California. Was this... could part of that have been the swing from the disabilities community?
20%. That's crazy.
Even the late votes coming in, the Sanders people were like, well, there's still a lot of late votes coming in and that should be to our advantage. And it's really not. It's holding at the same sort of plus 13 to 15 Hillary advantage. So that is interesting. But we're going to take a short break. Arliss, we hope you stay with us. And we could talk a little bit more about this, and then also wanted to talk a little bit more about how Bernie probably doesn't even realize some of the divisiveness he's created, and is he going to be surprised at the reaction when he endorses Hillary Clinton? So hold on a second. We'll be right back.
Sky all burns.
and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We have Arliss Bunny joining us. And I guess what I wanted to bring up now was, does Bernie even realize some of the animosity he is stoked? Does he care? And is he going to be very surprised when a lot of his supporters call him a sellout and a fraud and everything else when he formally endorses Hillary Clinton, which is, I guess, a matter of time? I mean, I guess in theory he might not. He might just pivot to hating Trump and never say anything about Hillary again. But it's probably inevitable. He's going to fully endorse her. And I think he's also going to realize – you know, I saw an interesting quote that he's getting some pressure to – get his supporters to not hate Hillary. And he's like, well, I can't just snap my fingers and make that happen. Is he going to realize, like, some of them, they've gone too far off the edge, and maybe not his words so much as some of his things his surrogates have said at his rallies and for him have really demonized Hillary to the point where there's no coming back for some of them.
Yep.
And does he realize how much divisiveness he has sown? And
I feel like he got sucked into this in a way that I was not expecting,
right,
and lost sight of what his goal was.
Wasn't his whole claim to fame he never goes negative?
Yep. And you know, he really was an issue candidate,
right,
and he wanted to bring up this issue, and he did that, and he did it well. And then he got sucked into this, like, I might win and power, and I have terrible advisors, and I hate Hillary Clinton, and now, I mean, I'm losing my mind with Bernie Sanders already, but I agree, when he endorses her, which I think he has to do for his own legacy, he's going to get some of the taste of what the rest of us have been feeling from his supporters.
But then at that point, will it be such a low number that it won't even be? Because remember, Twitter, like I described, Twitter is like those lizards that puff themselves up to look a lot bigger. So you have this really tiny minority of people, but they're so active and they're always online.
It's like just Trump supporters.
It makes it feel like there's so damn many of them.
Yeah, they're loud.
And it's like, because like Sean King will post, I'll never ever vote for Hillary, she's a fascist, and it'll get 200 likes in a minute. And you'll go, whoa, but it's like the only 200 people in the world that think that way, that are always going to be ready for those alerts.
Yeah.
And to tweet that? Or am I off base with this?
I think Bernie's in trouble. I think Bernie himself personally, I think he's really going to have to rethink. And I don't know if he can. I think he went down the rabbit hole, and frankly, we rabbits don't want him.
Yeah.
And there's not room for him here.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is that he drank the Kool-Aid.
He drank his own Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Right?
And
that's what I think,
well,
too.
Well, no,
he
also drank other people's Kool-Aid.
But, like,
yes,
he believes the myth that they all made up about him now. Like, he really, I think, believes that, like, oh, it's a conspiracy and rigged and it's blah, blah, blah. And you're like, wait,
and he
Bernie
refuses
Sanders
to look at the numbers that a large portion of these independents and non-affiliated voters that he's fighting to get more of them fighting the Democratic primary are just people who hate Hillary Clinton and are not progressives whatsoever.
Correct.
Yeah, and they were never, in the general, they were never going to vote for a Democrat.
Right.
Nope.
You know, that it was never going to be that way. You know, I certainly live in a part of the country where people pull ballots. You can, you know, in the primary, you can go in and request a ballot from either party, and people absolutely pull ballots and vote for the weaker candidate. And I am a little bit embarrassed to say I did that once.
when and for who, if you want to divulge?
It was a local candidate.
Oh, okay.
Sheriff's. It was a local sheriff's race.
Okay.
And I just – the Democratic – candidate for sheriff was not the strongest candidate on earth, but a fairly good guy. And
I thought you were going to tell us you went in and voted for Alan Keyes or something, and I was really going to.
Oh, God, no. No. I couldn't actually bring myself morally to do that, but
right.
I did vote for the weaker Republican sheriff. But people, I mean, strategic voting is absolutely, and strategic, you know, as Greg talks about, you know, strategic poll. Yeah, strategic poll answering
right.
is, you know, when,
oh, absolutely.
And that absolutely takes place. Sorry. So, you know, I don't
think you never believe one poll.
That's right. I don't think we really know the real numbers really quite yet until we get through the next couple of weeks. But
sure.
There will always be this group of people who are very, very upset. But my question is, did they vote in the last election?
That's my question.
Well,
Obama got elected by pretty big numbers, like, and I'm pretty sure they won't.
I am so tired of trying to capitulate to these people. We don't need them. If you don't want to vote, don't vote. I don't care. We didn't need you before. We don't need you now. I don't care. Just don't vote. It's fine.
To a large extent, I would agree. But in the sense that I'm thinking bigger and actually starting a movement and really making huge gains in Congress and making huge gains locally, you know, we do need a large coalition, including these young voters. And yeah. I think Bernie also lost sight of that a little bit.
He lost sight of that a lot, because here's the thing. He could have, had he folded up tent at the logical time, had he folded up tent at the, you know, at the, after the New York primary, basically, when it, mm-hmm. you know, when the writing was really on the wall in a pretty indelible way. If he had stopped at that point in time, or, you know, shortly thereafter, and gracefully said, okay, I get it, but here's the thing. I'm going to continue on through Washington, D.C., because I think it's really important that we light a fire under young people such that
right.
in 2018 and 2020, we get progressives on the ballot who are prioritizing these issues. And had that been his message at that point in time and forward, had he started building a future movement at that time, imagine where we would be now.
Yep.
Agreed.
Yep.
Agreed completely.
Absolutely. And if he had, you know, started with, I mean, I agree. I think he could have kept running. And I've said that since the beginning. Like, it's fine with me if he continues to be on the ballot and be in primary states, but enough with the attack on Hillary. Enough. It's over. It's done. Stop it. Shut up. Talk about the issues. Talk about economic
and
inequality. Talk about how awful
today.
Trump is. It's fine. Yeah. Enough with attacking Hillary. Like, that is so far outside of helpful. I don't even know where to begin.
And even today, you got Nina Turner and
yeah, she's really, oh my gosh. She's
I didn't just, hear what
and
happened.
I generally really, really like her, but she
what'd she say?
She has bought into this cult of hating Hillary Clinton so deep she can't swim out. And what's his name? Colonel West.
You know,
they're still out there doing it.
He's
Bernie has stopped doing it.
I love him in some ways, and then I also disagree with him a lot in other ways, but he's a pretty great guy. But yeah, I mean, I haven't heard Bernie other than, you know, I was talking to Trav about this earlier, Arliss. What a class act is Hillary Clinton. In her speech, she congratulates Bernie. She thanks him. She, I think, sincerely talked about the contribution he's made in this campaign. And then she's talking about the other side. And she says, you know, even the ones that aren't going to vote our way. Basically saying, even Trump supporters, we're going to help them too. Because we're going to help everybody because that's what we do. And I thought to myself, God, what a classy lady. What a class act is she. And then I get Bernie out here. No, nothing. Just raise the thing to the ground and no, really, we're just going to keep going and it's not over. And I mean, it's just like, God,
well,
the difference is so stark now. Like, he's making a fool of himself. And then post Obama's announcement, like, he really looks stupid if he doesn't knock this off. He looks foolish.
He will. He's going to have to rein in his surrogates or just stop bringing them to these rallies or whatever. I guess he wants to lose badly in D.C. too, officially.
I guess.
But I guess I get it at this point. Like, look, we have to go to Philly, and you know, he's still trying to get Barney Frank and Malloy off the panel there. So there's still that.
Yeah, because Barney Frank, that's the guy that's been so anti-progressive from beginning to end.
Yeah.
That's the guy you want to go after. Oh, my God.
Do you remember when they went after John Lewis? I was like, are you kidding me right now? John Lewis and Barney Frank, they're not progressive enough for Bernie Sanders?
And
no.
You know, Bernie Sanders talks about, you know, he talks about financial reform, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sorry, what's the name of the big financial regulation act that passed? What's that called?
Dodd-Frank.
God, yeah.
Well, and that's where Bernie has gotten very curmudgeonly, in that, you know, the Barney Frank thing, now it's become personal. And I know I read, like, political ad, they never really liked each other. It's like, yeah, well, they were on the same team. You know, I mean,
Bernie needs to remember they still are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in his way, he doesn't see it. He's taken a lot of this stuff very personally. And I think he's going to come down to earth.
Yeah,
I
we
hope.
Accuse women of being too emotional and not rational and thinking with their emotions and not their heads.
Right.
And here's this.
That's clearly not happening with Bernie and his male supporters, right?
Uh-huh. But Clinton, she's so shrill and emotional all the time. Come on.
Yeah.
Makes me crazy.
Well, here's my question, Arliss. Mm-hmm. We all agree that if the general public got to know the actual Hillary Clinton, I'm not saying they'd all like her, but a lot more would, and they'd be a lot more comfortable with her. Is the media going to allow that to happen? Like, now that, okay, she's the nominee and she's made history, are we going to take a real look at the real Hillary Clinton, or is it going to be all about emails and Monica Lewinsky and, oh, Trump called you a bimbo, what do you have to say? Like, are they going to be fair, and they're going to give the American people an actual chance to look at her record and look at her as a person and actually decide, rather than Hillary Clinton the meme, which, you know, is great for clickbait.
Yeah.
I am dubious.
I think that Donald Trump made a really, really major tactical error.
Oh, which one?
Yeah, I know. I say that like it's a singular thing. But here's the deal. You don't attack the press.
Yeah.
You don't go after them.
Right.
And when he continually over and over and over and over again wages war on the press themselves and makes fun of them and tries to humiliate them.
And threatens to, if president, to put them in jail and make it illegal to say bad things about Donald. Yeah.
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 And I really think that he has severely underestimated the ability of the press to, you know, change like the wind. And folks who have never considered for 1 minute covering something boring like Hillary in a small gathering where she, by the way, folks, is warm and generous and kind.
Yeah, she does really well in those.
She's really good in small and medium-sized gatherings. Big gatherings, she does what she has basically been, you know, trained to do over time, which is, you know, this very straightforward, measured male presentation of information. Because, by the way, a man giving a speech like Hillary gives would never be called wooden.
Nope.
Well,
but
he'd be called presidential.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the flip side. Trump is still the hottest ticket in town. And it's still about ratings at the end of the day. And finally, Joe Scarborough decided that he should do what all his friends are doing and finally denounce Trump as a racist, as if he didn't know 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. Yes.
Yeah, but when Joe the idiot Scarborough finally has.
God, he's the worst. Him and Mark Halperin should just elope already.
Oh, my gosh.
Just go away.
Just, the man doesn't have two cogent brain cells to rub together, but
he really doesn't.
He really doesn't. But I mean, when even he can connect the dots enough to get to Trump as a racist, I think that the press pool is pretty well getting the message. But I was really interested by Matt Taibbi's recent post when he was talking about he doesn't think the Democratic Party is going to get it. He doesn't think that he thinks the Democratic Party is going to take the wrong message away from Hillary's win. And I think Matt is completely wrong. I think the Democratic Party is looking at this and saying, thank goodness we got the, you know, and this is the conventional, you know, core of the party folks. They're going to look at this and think, thank goodness we got the person we thought we wanted, you know, and we made it through the primary.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I think they're going to be looking over their shoulder, and I think they got the message. I think they got the memo that they got it by the skin of their teeth, and that there's this big wave coming, and they either surf it or they drowned. And I think the Democratic Party knows that. I think they got that loud and clear.
Well, Elizabeth Warren has been unleashed, and she's been on a tear in just 24 hours. So, you know, Biden is not going to pull his punches.
Obama's
not going to pull his punches.
Yep.
And Hillary isn't even pulling her punches. So I understand Matt's, sort of knee-jerk reaction to go there, because as a Democrat, we've seen that too many times and been so frustrated by it. But I think you're right. And I hope you're right.
But the other thing I wanted to talk about with that was this – I was in an NPR story, and they were saying that we've never gotten to see Hillary really take the gloves off because she's always fighting the nice guy.
Yeah.
It's either Barack Obama or Bernie Sanders. She can't really go after any of these people, and that we don't really know what it's going to look like when she gets to actually campaign against her opponent, and not like we have most things in common.
To the nth degree with that.
And how
it's not just Jeb Bush.
She's going to be really on fire. That's what a lot of people say, is that like you finally let her at Donald Trump, and it's going to be a whole other Hillary Clinton that I think a lot of people are going to respond positively to, instead of this sort of hand-wringing, I don't want to say too much bad, but I want to defend myself, but right. How do I walk the line of doing – no, just attack Trump. That's fine.
Well, we saw that the other
30
day.
30 years of biting her tongue.
Yes. Yes. I'm so excited, Harless. I'm so excited. Oh, God. I can't wait.
Well, we saw that the other day with that big speech that got huge marks that left, mm-hmm. left Trump and the entire RNC just dumbfounded for mm-hmm. like 24 hours.
Like,
I loved the timeline on that. She's talking, she's giving the speech, and Trump is sending out all these inane speech, tweets
like
about her presentation, and completely non sequitur, not unimportant comments. And then she says he's probably tweeting right now, and then it goes absolutely silent.
Yes, they took his phone. I'm sure his campaign staff was like, no more for you. No, we talked about this on a couple of podcasts ago, I think. But yeah, that's exactly what we thought. We were like, isn't that the best?
Well, speaking of what the staff will and will not allow Trump to do, do you think, Arliss, that they're actually going to debate? I have my serious doubts.
Will he agree to it?
I think it's good.
What he agrees to is irrelevant. He agreed to debate Bernie a couple weeks ago. I mean,
will he actually do it?
Is he actually going to show up and do it?
I think he's not going to be able to resist, because he is such a narcissist.
Yeah.
That he's going to want to do that in the worst possible way. And he's going to do it in the worst possible way. But every advisor and the entire RNC, I mean, Rens Priebus is going to be throwing himself across the door of the, debate venue, trying to keep Trump out. Begging him not to go in the door. I saw a political cartoonist who, on the night that Priebus had, that Trump had finally gathered enough delegates, and the little cartoon was Rens Priebus, drinking bleach. And that is my ongoing, there can't be a worse job in the world than his right now. I never, ever, ever thought I would say these words, but I feel sorry for Rens Priebus. I do. He bought himself a problem. He paid for it. Every dime he paid for it, he walked himself right into it. But I hate to wish this kind of horror on anyone.
Seriously. I kind of agree with you that Donald Trump, I think, believes that he would beat her.
Yes.
No one else believes that, but he probably
does
in his little brain.
But
I don't
know. Isn't he just as scared of being emasculated on a stage by Hillary Clinton?
No. He doesn't think it's possible.
I don't know.
I don't know either. I think you're right, probably, but I also think enough people tell him I think you're right, Arliss, because enough people tell him you're going to lose. Like, don't do it. He's going to be like, I'll show you, because he's a child.
In my mind,
he's a giant man baby, and he can't help himself.
In my mind, it's the other way around. In my mind, it's him making a million excuses to not debate her, and his advisor saying, you have to show up to the debate. It's just something that has to be done.
They don't want him to debate her, do
they?
No, they don't want him to, but they know that he has to.
You can't just skip out. Like, maybe you could get away with not releasing your taxes, and maybe you could get away with being an actual fascist, and maybe you could, you know, but it's like there's certain things, like, you have to debate the other candidate from the other party.
But right? He doesn't really have to do anything he doesn't want to do,
no,
clearly.
Yeah, there's no rule that says you must.
No, I know. There's no rule, but...
No, I think they're going to have to hold him down. I think there's going to be duct tape over his mouth. They're going to have to cut off his tweeting thumbs. And they're going to have to hold him down to keep him from trying to
debate. You can't have
her.
A teleprompter at the debate. But like Palin did with Biden, he's just going to have to
memorize stuff.
But he won't stick to that because Hillary is going to troll him into saying God knows what.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not big on putting together watch parties, but oh my gosh.
Drinking games. You know,
yeah. Oh my God, I can't
popcorn
wait.
Popcorn and, you know, popcorn and liquor. I mean, that it would be just the most fun thing ever.
I'm going to watch it with Dawn, and it is going to be glorious. I cannot wait. I mean, if it happens, it will be the most amazing.
Like, they'll do one or two, but usually you do what, three or four? And like he'll cut it down to one, or his campaign will cut it down to one for some
reason.
They'll
cut it down to one. And I do think that the Hillary campaign ought to, just before the debate, she ought to put up on her website available, you know, a limited edition, a little towel to, you know, that says, you know, essentially because she's going to wipe the floor with him.
I love it.
That's nice. That's good.
That's cute. That's super cute.
You know, it's like the woman card. You can go on her site and buy a woman card.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw that.
I want one.
There should be a whole woman deck of cards with all famous women.
There is.
Aww.
Oh, really? That's great.
Yeah, she's got a woman deck of cards, and it's got things like, you know, it's got all kinds of statistics related to women.
Wow.
And it's very cool. And the ace, of course, is Hillary.
Of course. Of course. That's so cute. I love that.
Who's the Joker? Palin?
Well, probably Trump, I would think.
True.
But
true.
Anyway, it's pretty clever. I haven't seen the deck. I've just seen a couple of the cards up on the website, but her store, but it's pretty great.
Wow.
Okay.
Have you heard, by the way, of what Hillary, people keep asking Hillary what Bill will do when she's, you know, when she's in the White House. And have you heard her answer on this? It's amazing.
I would be like, he'll be a supportive role like I was. What did she say?
He's going to take on as a special project Appalachian redevelopment.
Oh, great.
Wow.
And employment. Yeah. And he's going to make
awesome.
That. And, her comment about that is, these aren't people who are going to vote for me. I'm not doing this to get votes.
Right.
This isn't a region of the country
true.
That's going to vote for me.
Correct.
She said, but I think it's, you know, you don't become the president because you only want to do things for people who are going to vote for you. And Bill has, this is something that's really close to his heart. And this is what he's going to do during her presidency.
That's
I think
amazing.
It's incredible.
That's amazing.
That's good. I hadn't heard
that's
about that.
Amazing.
That should get more press. And speaking of things that should get more press, we'll kind of wrap up with this. Did you listen to K-Grow after you hung up today, Arliss?
Yes. Oh, sure.
So the USA Today story about Trump stiffing anyone and everybody who has ever worked for him, to me, would be the biggest story of the campaign, if not for all the other crap that everybody's buried under in terms of Trump. Because that, to me, is just jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
I mean, that's everything supposedly that decides these kinds of elections, like the working man, the heart, you know, Joe the plumber, all this stuff. Well, this is it. And this is proof that Trump has systematically tried to not pay people who have done work for him over the course of his...
Honest, hardworking, blue-collar Americans.
Yes.
And this rich playboy who...
This real estate
developer. Inherited
a
bunch of money, decided not to pay them after they worked.
Yeah. I mean, if this doesn't blow up huge, then I kind of give up on the press. I don't care about all the other stories that are getting you all the clicks right now. This needs to be front and center. I mean, this is a huge story.
And doesn't it hurt him with his supporters? Who are themselves working class people, many of them.
Well, they'll just say it's lies.
Yeah, they'll just say it's lies.
They'll just say it's lies. He'll say it's lies and they'll just parrot.
Well, Trump
that.
Said it's not true, so it must not be that the media, you know how they are.
Right.
Well, but here's the thing about this. Do you not think that the Hillary campaign already has ads in the can with, you know, various people from those, right, you know, from those lawsuits and that kind of thing. You know, anybody that they can get who isn't legally prevented from speaking, because part of the settlements with a number of those people was that they were legally prevented from saying anything.
There are settlements, but there's plenty of people who either lost or they're still in court or.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you not think that there isn't an ad already in the can, a really, really good ad on this subject? I think they're going to run it heavily. I think it's going to be everywhere. I think that's one of those ads that's going to go all 50 states.
Yeah, absolutely.
I keep forgetting that we're at that point now.
Yeah.
Like all the Republicans, just nobody ever went after him. And I keep forgetting, and I'm so delighted that, oh, yeah, we get Hillary now.
No,
so
no.
All the things
they,
that we've been yelling and screaming about.
They went after him from
the right.
The right.
He's not anti-abortion enough.
Right.
He's not racist enough.
He said
enough.
A nice thing about Hillary once. He, you know.
He's not awful enough.
That's the only thing. That was the, like, this is how we're going to beat him.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that worked out great.
And it really is amazing because not everybody who ran against him was stupid. They were people with whom I disagree with incredibly, but they weren't all stupid. You know, they weren't all Marco Rubio. They
poor Marco.
I know. But the thing about you know, some of the folks there was that they absolutely could have and should have focused on these emotional, you know, fit for office issues. And I'm shocked.
They did once he was, well, they kind of did once he had an insurmountable lead and it was too late.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they didn't go after him when it mattered, when they could have stopped it.
Because no one thought this was ever going to be the thing. Nobody. I didn't.
They didn't. They underestimated the simple-mindedness of their own voting base.
Yep. They thought, no, that's not our people.
And
no,
the prejudices. After dog whistling those prejudices for decades, mind you.
After grooming them, raising, you know, planting them, watering them, raising them.
Yeah.
You know, pruning them for all of these decades.
Yeah, they're man-eating
they're
plants
shocked.
And all of a sudden.
Yeah, they're shocked. That, right, exactly.
God, exactly
it
right.
It bit me.
Exactly
wasn't
right.
Wasn't supposed to do that.
Yep.
What's the Broadway play with the
Little Shop of Horrors.
Little, yes. Shop of Horrors. Little Shop of Horrors. Yes. They made Audrey, yes, too.
They did.
Trump is Audrey, too. And
now it's thrashing them around
him
in its mouth. What happened? I don't like this plant anymore. I can't feed it.
I don't understand.
Well, that's about going to wrap it up. We have airports to go to.
Yes.
Not for us.
No.
Speaking of which, though, I guess we might as well divulge this on the air. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to make it to the Netroots extravaganza in St. Louis. Budgets and schedules just are not going to allow us to do that. But if
we are coming next year.
We are. Yeah, we're definitely going to be there next year. But
yes,
if you wanted to plug that a little bit, Arliss, and also your show coming up Monday again, because that sounds really amazing.
So both Will and I will be at Netroots Nation in St. Louis in July. We're really excited about it. And we will be on Radio Row. We'll be broadcasting from there, both interviews and full episodes of the show.
We'll be listening.
Come by and see us, chat. We had made, and they just arrived today, Hopping Mad t-shirts.
Aww.
for Will and I. So you can identify us there. The front of the t-shirts have our logo, and the back of the sheet t-shirts say politics, economics, carrots.
Aww.
And so we're all excited about that. But then our show on Monday, it airs on Netroots Radio at 8 a.m. and right before KGRO's show. And Will is going to be talking about the sort of the British constitutional issues that lead into Brexit. I'm going to be talking about Brexit as it relates to Ireland.
Yeah, and a lot of Brexit news lately.
Yeah, and then we're going to be all Brexit all the time next week. But then we have this incredible, incredible interview with Ariella Barker, and you cannot miss it. I'm telling you cannot miss this interview. And then listen to the podcast when it posts, because there's an additional hour of that interview, and Ariella does a really remarkable job and brings forward issues I had never thought about. Things that just never crossed my mind. One of the significant issues for the PWD community is rural transportation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Right.
I mean, it's incredibly obvious once you think of it, but, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I knew because I used to have to arrange that transportation for stroke patient research subjects in rural Texas. So I actually know exactly what you're talking about, Arliss. So.
Well, wow. But here's something stupid. I should have known because I used to have to employ – I lived in a rural community, and when my epilepsy was particularly I was having a problem with not being properly diagnosed and the whole thing. But anyway, I couldn't drive for several years, and I had to employ a driver. I had to employ a driver myself.
Right. And it just never occurred to you that the problem was –
bigger than me.
Right, right. That's exactly how it always works, isn't it? That's amazing. I'm really looking forward to that.
That's going to be awesome. I can't wait to listen. I'll be listening to the podcast, of course, because we're out west and that's a crazy early time for us.
Yes.
But really looking forward to it. And Arliss, thank you so much. You have a all the time open invitation anytime you want to talk politics or economics or carrots or anything else.
Yeah.
Please come back on soon. It's going to be a really interesting general election, and there will be so much to say. So,
yes. Thank you so much, Arliss.
My pleasure. And I think the general is going to be a lot more, in many ways, fun from here on out. Because
than the primary for sure.
Yep. Yeah. Yes. So we will no longer be fighting amongst ourselves. It's going to be a good time.
Yes.
Thank you very much for having me. I've really enjoyed it. You take care.
Okay, thanks, you too. As usual, I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And stay active, stay tuned, stay involved, and have a great weekend. Bye. I took the same